Right. Diving in today, getting ready to tackle something that I think, hits close to home for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Marriage and divorce, and specifically how the Bible talks about these things.
Yeah.
You send over this really fascinating lecture by Dr. Gary Metters. I think it was on 1 Corinthians chapter 7.
That's right.
So we're going to try to unpack some of the key ideas there. And I think even more important than that is like the historical context.
Yeah.
Like how have people understood these verses over the centuries?
Yeah.
And why does it seem like there's so much disagreement sometimes?
Right, right.
So that's kind of our mission for this deep dive.
Right? Yeah. And I think what's interesting is it's not just about like, what does the Bible say on the surface?
Right.
But like you said, how has that been interpreted and applied throughout history?
Yeah.
And I think that gives us a richer understanding of where we are today in the church.
Yeah.
And why there are different viewpoints. And I think that's kind of the goal here, is to help people understand where these things come from.
Yeah.
And give them a shortcut to some of that, you know.
To really grasping the core of what makes this stuff so complex.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah.
How have interpretations of these biblical texts on marriage and divorce changed over time?
Right.
And like, what were some of the big factors that might have driven those changes? It really makes you wonder.
Absolutely.
You know? Okay, so to set the stage.
Yeah.
We got to go back to the Old Testament, how the Old Testament kind of lays out this whole idea of marriage.
So I think as Dr. Metters highlighted, we got to start in Genesis, right?
Yeah.
The creation account with Adam and Eve, that is just absolutely foundational, right? Yeah. That Adam names all these animals, they come in pairs, and he realizes like he himself lacks a true counterpart.
Yeah.
And then the creation of Eve from Adam, that's seen as this really unique bond of kinship in marriage.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because we talk about two become one, but that's not just some nice saying,
right?
You know, Dr. Metters actually talked about how the Old Testament really sees this as kinship.
Right.
Like families becoming related through marriage.
Yeah.
And he even mentioned this thing, which might sound a little weird to us today, but this idea of the mixing of seminal fluids within a marriage kind of solidifying that kinship.
That's interesting.
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's heavy duty. So
that's fascinating. And I think what's interesting is how that concept of kinship maybe even ties into later legal passages that we're going to get to.
Right, right.
But yeah, beyond that, Genesis, I mean, it presents marriage as like the answer to this fundamental human need for relationship. I mean, Adam, you know, by himself.
Wasn't complete.
He was not complete.
Yeah.
And so the very design of creation, according to Genesis, requires both male and female to fulfill God's expectation to fill the earth, right? Like that original created pattern.
Mm. Yeah. And I found it interesting how Dr. Metters brought up that cultural mandate from Genesis.
Yeah.
Which I think sometimes we forget.
Absolutely.
You know, we think about the Great Commission. We got to go make disciples of all nations. But like that first mandate, that cultural mandate, is to take care of the world.
To subdue the earth.
To cultivate, to work it.
Yeah.
And he positions marriage as actually being a key part of that.
That's right.
Which is interesting.
Absolutely.
And also the fact that he brings up this idea that throughout Scripture, sexual relations are seen as holy, sacred,
apart.
Not just for having children.
Right.
Like, that's not the only purpose, but
it's an end in itself.
Right. And he actually mentioned Fissmeyer, who's like a commentator on the Bible.
Yeah, a biblical scholar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who said, you know, sex is a major and intended part of that marital relationship.
That's right.
Which I think is easy to forget, especially when you look back and see all these different times in history where people thought the only reason you should get married was to procreate.
Right.
And just like, where did that come from?
You know, I think some of that came from even Greek philosophical ideas.
Right.
Where they kind of downplay
the physical part.
The physical.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And of course, Dr. Metters had to contrast that with where we are today.
Right.
You know, we're so focused on sexual gratification.
Right. Yeah. It's all about self-satisfaction.
And it's like, look, sexual desire is good.
Yeah.
It's a created part of being human.
It's good. It's not bad.
Right.
Yeah.
But fulfilling those desires shouldn't be the main reason
to
get married.
Right. Yeah. It goes deeper than that.
Deeper. Yeah.
It goes deeper than that.
It's about that connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we zoom out and look at the bigger picture here, marriage, it's used as this really powerful image throughout Scripture to describe God's relationship with his people.
Right.
You know, that analogy of Yahweh and Israel as husband and wife, it's this recurring theme
right.
that highlights that deep commitment, faithfulness, yeah. you know, in a marriage.
Yeah.
Right. It's supposed to reflect that.
And then, of course, we have to talk about the elephant in the room,
yeah.
which is the fall, you know,
yes.
back in Genesis, right? Where everything gets just distorted, broken. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So that sets the stage. That's kind of the foundation.
Yeah.
Now let's look at some specific Old Testament passages that kind of deal with this issue of divorce head on.
All right. So I think Deuteronomy 24.1 to 4
yeah.
is a key passage here.
Okay.
It describes the situation where a man divorces his wife because she displeases him, and then she goes and remarries another guy.
Right.
And so Dr. Metters was very clear to point out this passage isn't starting the practice of divorce.
Right.
Divorce was already happening in that culture. Moses is actually providing a legal framework to try to manage it.
Right. It's a concession.
Right. It's a concession to yeah. the reality of sin.
It's not a divine stamp of approval.
It's not an endorsement.
Right.
It's not a requirement from God, right?
So it's not saying divorce is okay,
mm-hmm.
but it's saying in these situations,
yeah.
here's how things need to play out.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So the important part isn't that divorce is allowed.
Yeah.
But why the first husband, if she's been with someone else, can't remarry her.
Right. That's exactly right.
That's kind of the...
And that goes back to that idea of kinship.
Yeah.
And avoiding what they would have seen as incestuous implications because
right.
of that mixing of fluids, right? And the previous relationship, it's almost like...
It's like she's still family.
Yeah. She's still considered a relative.
Even though...
Yeah. And even if that second husband dies...
Right.
He can't go back and marry that first wife.
It's like a permanent severing.
It's a permanent thing.
Yeah. That's pretty intense. So.
It is. It is.
It's not just about permitting divorce, but about the consequences of remarriage within this whole system of kinship.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
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 Okay. What about Ezra?
Yeah.
9 and 10. That's another passage that comes up a lot.
Ezra 9 and 10.
Talking about intermarriage.
Intermarriage. Yeah.
So what's going on there?
So that's a passage. And Dr. Metters really emphasized
yeah.
we need to be careful with context.
Yeah.
He said this was a very specific historical situation for Israel.
Right.
And their need to preserve the messianic line.
Okay.
Right. It was about maintaining the distinctiveness
right.
of God's people for a particular redemptive purpose.
At that time.
At that time.
Right.
And so it's a mistake to take that specific instance and try to apply it as some blanket prohibition against all intermarriage.
Right.
Or interracial marriage.
Today. Okay. So.
Yeah.
So context is everything when we're all interpreting right. these ancient texts.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Malachi 2.
Yes.
Which comes up a lot when people talk about God's view of divorce.
Yeah. Very popular passage there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The imagery of Israel as the unfaithful wife. It's powerful.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
And it says God hates divorce.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
But then Dr. Metters pointed out something kind of interesting about the Hebrew word there.
Yeah.
That's used rib.
It doesn't just mean hate.
Right.
It's like this legal dispute.
Right.
It's a lawsuit. It's like God is bringing charges against Israel, his wife.
Yeah.
For her unfaithfulness.
Which we see in Hosea too.
Yes, that's right.
That kind of image. Of...
So it highlights the seriousness of breaking that covenant relationship.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Old Testament background, right?
That's Old Testament.
That's kind of the foundation.
Foundation. Yep.
So now let's move into the New Testament.
Yeah, let's go there.
Which I know
it's done, even more complex.
Yeah. That's a whole other layer.
Yeah, it does.
Of complexity to this. So what do we see when we start looking at the Gospels?
So when we look at Mark and Luke, you encounter what Dr. Metters called these like very idealistic statements from Jesus.
Okay.
They suggest that there are no grounds for divorce and no possibility of remarriage.
Wow.
And in those accounts, Jesus even refers back to creation, right? Genesis, and says, from the beginning, it was not so.
Right, right.
And it's interesting, even his disciples are like shocked by this.
Right.
They wondered if it wouldn't be better to not even get married at all if that was the standard.
Which just shows how radical what Jesus was saying was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
yeah, so.
What happens when we get to Matthew?
Yeah. So Matthew.
Because that's where things get a little...
A little tricky.
A little sticky, right.
Tricky, that's right, yeah.
Because we have the exception clauses.
Yes, the famous exception clauses.
Yeah.
So Matthew's gospel includes those phrases like, except for porneia, which is usually translated as sexual immorality or fornication.
Right.
And historically, these exceptions became super central to interpretations
yeah.
that allowed for divorce in situations like adultery.
Right.
And then by extension, that meant that maybe remarriage was possible for the person who was wronged.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is where Jesus's comments about Moses and Deuteronomy come back in.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Right.
Yeah.
Because in Matthew, he talks about how Moses allowed for divorce.
He said Moses allowed it because of the hardness of people's hearts.
Right.
But that wasn't the ideal from the beginning.
So he's like setting this higher bar.
A higher standard. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So trying to bring this all together now, Matthew, Mark, Luke.
Right.
What kind of overall picture are we starting to see?
So Dr. Metters argues
if
we interpret Matthew in a particular way,
okay,
you can actually see this consistent teaching throughout the New Testament.
Okay.
One man, one woman joined together for life, and only death dissolves that union.
Okay.
Which then opens the door for remarriage.
Okay. So even in Matthew, even with those exception clauses.
Yeah. He would say even in cases of serious sin, like adultery.
Right.
Divorce represents this breaking
of that ideal.
Of that ideal. It's a consequence of living in a fallen world.
Right.
It's still viewed as sin.
Yeah.
Like this fundamental breakdown
right.
of the relationship God intended.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Romans 7 kind of fits in here because it clearly states that death of a spouse allows for remarriage.
Yes, that's right.
Which, again, Dr. Metters contrasted with those kinship concerns we saw in Deuteronomy.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, 1 Corinthians 7.
1 Corinthians 7.
Paul's dealing with all these different questions.
Yeah, all sorts of
about marriage and singleness.
About Corinthian church. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Right. So to really understand how these different texts have been understood and applied over time.
Yeah.
We've got to look at the history of interpretation.
That's right.
And, you know, Dr. Metters actually highlighted this book.
Yes.
Eases on Divorce by Heth and Wenham.
Heth and Wenham, yeah, great book.
It's a really helpful resource for kind of outlining those views.
Yeah, it's a great overview.
But even then he was like, look, it doesn't fully get into the complexities of remarriage.
Right.
Which is like a whole other.
A whole other can of worms.
Can of worms, yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the main way the early church understood these passages?
So the early church, like you said, Heth and Wenham document this. Mm. They said that the marriage bond was for life until death.
Okay.
And if there was adultery, which was usually what they meant by unchastity,
right.
separation was expected.
Right.
But they generally didn't believe either party had a right to remarry. Yeah. And so they looked at things like Matthew's exceptions and 1 Corinthians 7:15, where it talks about, you know, a believer being married to an unbeliever.
Right.
They said that's grounds for ending the marriage in terms of living together.
Right.
But not for entering into a new marriage.
Right.
And so if you got divorced, you faced some pretty serious social stigma.
Wow. So that was like the dominant understanding.
That was the dominant view for a long time.
Yeah.
1300, 1400 years.
Wow. Until Erasmus.
Until Erasmus.
Okay. So he comes along in the 16th century.
Yeah. The 16th century. So Erasmus, super influential scholar, he was like, you know what? This is too harsh.
Interesting.
It's too strict.
Okay.
He argued that things like sexual infidelity based on Matthew 5 and 19.
Right.
And desertion should be valid reasons for divorce.
Okay.
And this is key. He implied that the innocent party in these cases
should be able to remarry.
Should have the right to remarry. So he's pushing back against that long-held Roman Catholic tradition.
Right, right.
And he's prioritizing what he felt was a more compassionate approach.
Okay.
You know, based on charity.
Even if it went against, like, what the official church law said.
Canon law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did the reformers, how did Luther and Calvin.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And all those guys. How do they respond to that?
Yeah, so they were significantly influenced.
By Erasmus.
By Erasmus.
Okay.
So Luther, for example, he accepted both adultery and desertion as valid grounds.
Right.
And he allowed for remarriage of the innocent spouse.
Okay.
John Calvin, his tradition, which is reflected in the Westminster Confession of Faith.
Right.
Also largely adopted this Erasmian viewpoint.
Right. Okay.
Now, there were guys who came along later, like John Milton, who advocated for even more, like, allowances for divorce.
Right.
But the main thrust of the Reformation
followed Erasmus's lead.
Followed this line of thinking, yeah.
So this Erasmian view became really influential in Protestant theology.
Absolutely.
So it's like, okay, you can get divorced and you can remarry in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
All right. So what were the main things that people would say to kind of justify this view, especially this idea that the innocent party could remarry?
So Dr. Metters, he highlighted a couple key arguments that are used to support it.
Yeah.
First is this belief that when Jesus talked about divorce,
yeah,
he was specifically addressing and correcting the Mosaic law in Deuteronomy 24.
Okay.
Right? Like, that was his target.
Right.
And then the second is this understanding that the except for porneia clause in Matthew 19.9,
yeah,
modifies the entire statement, thus giving permission for divorce and remarriage,
right,
for the innocent party.
For the innocent party, okay.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned this concept called legal fiction.
Yes.
What in the world is that about?
So this is really interesting. This idea originated in the Roman Church,
okay,
later adopted by the Reformers. In cases of adultery, the guilty spouse should be considered legally dead.
Whoa.
This legal fiction.
That's a wild concept.
No, no, right?
Yeah.
But they did this.
So it's like, okay, you committed adultery.
Yeah.
You're dead to me.
You're out.
Legally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was a way to navigate that apparent prohibition against remarriage by saying, well, the marriage was already dissolved.
By the adulterous act.
By the act. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So Dr. Metters also talked about some more specialized ways of understanding Matthew.
Yeah.
Focusing specifically on what that word porneia means.
That's right. And these are interpretations that argue that Matthew's exception wasn't like this general allowance for any sexual sin.
Okay.
As grounds for divorce.
Okay.
But it refers to very specific situations.
Right.
Within the Jewish community at that time.
Okay. And this is trying to bring Matthew closer in line with
Mark and Luke.
Yeah, that's stricter stance.
The stricter stance.
Yeah, okay, so like the rabbinic view you mentioned.
Yeah, so this is a view that's supported by scholars like Fitzmyer.
Okay.
Suggests that porneia, that Greek word,
yeah,
was actually equivalent to the Hebrew word zanot.
Okay.
Which referred to marriages within prohibited degrees of kinship.
Right.
Basically incest.
Right, which the Old Testament talks about.
As outlined in Leviticus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Fitzmyer, he even points to the Damascus document from Qumran.
Right.
Which uses zanot in this way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's possible.
So maybe that's what Matthew had in mind.
Maybe that's what Matthew had in mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what about the intermarriage view?
So that's another specialized interpretation,
yeah,
that proposes that porneia refers specifically to intermarriage between Jews and Gentiles.
Right.
Which was forbidden.
Under Jewish law.
Under the law at that time, yeah.
So the exception would only apply if it was like an unlawful marriage.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not just general unfaithfulness within a valid Jewish marriage.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then there's this betrothal view.
Yes.
Which seemed really specific to like the customs of the time.
Very specific.
So what about?
So that view is associated with scholars like Isaacson.
Okay.
Suggests that porneia refers specifically to sexual unfaithfulness that occurs during the betrothal period.
Right, which is kind of like this in-between time.
Yeah, it's like this legally binding commitment.
Right.
But the marriage isn't fully consummated,
right,
until the actual wedding.
Right.
So they would say Matthew's exception
only applies there.
Only applies in those cases.
Okay.
But, and Dr. Metters pointed this out,
yeah,
that word porneia is used so broadly in the New Testament,
right,
that it's kind of tough to make that argument.
To narrow it down that much.
To narrow it down that much, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so after looking at all these different viewpoints,
right,
what is Dr. Metters' own take?
Yeah, so he is pretty firm in his belief that the Bible ultimately teaches this ideal of a lifelong exclusive union between one man and one woman.
Okay.
And only death dissolves that bond.
Okay.
No remarriage after divorce.
So he would say remarriage after divorce is adultery.
That is his conclusion, yes.
Based on what Jesus says.
Based on Jesus' statements, yeah.
Okay, and he actually kind of critiques,
yeah,
that legal fiction.
He says it's an attempt to get around Jesus' clear teaching.
Yeah.
And finds it problematic.
Especially in today's world.
Especially today.
With abuse and no-fault divorce.
Yeah, all that.
Right.
And he even does this whole grammatical analysis.
Of Matthew 19.
Of Matthew 19.
To say,
yeah,
that the exception clause actually applies to putting away, like divorcing, right?
Not to marrying it.
Okay. So that would put Matthew more in line with...
with Mark and Luke.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a really strong view.
It's a strong view.
And we live in a broken world.
That's right.
So how does he say we should deal with situations where things fall apart?
So he really advocates for a framework,
okay,
that acknowledges sin, encourages seeking forgiveness, mm, and reconciliation where possible.
Yeah.
And emphasizes a process of spiritual restoration.
Yeah.
He's very strong on that.
Okay.
But he also believes that certain sins, particularly sexual unfaithfulness,
right,
have lasting consequences,
yep,
especially when it comes to leadership roles within the church.
Okay, so you might be forgiven.
You can be restored to fellowship.
Right.
But going back to a position of spiritual authority.
Right. Might be off the table.
Might not be possible.
Okay. So for somebody who's going through a divorce, what would his main advice be?
So he stresses, like, developing a biblical worldview.
Right.
Focusing on your relationship with God.
Yeah.
Carefully thinking about any new relationships. And right. Crucially, really studying these biblical texts.
Before you even think about remarriage.
Before you even think about it, yeah. And he even recommends two books. But he says only after you've really wrestled with the Bible itself.
Right.
Andrew Cornish's book on remarriage.
Okay.
And the Zondervan Counterpoints volume on remarriage after divorce.
Okay.
He really emphasizes the church addressing these issues with a commitment to purity.
Purity, yeah.
And he says, ultimately, marriage creates this indissoluble bond.
Yeah.
Almost like a blood relationship.
Yeah.
That's only truly dissolved by death. What he calls the forensic teaching of Scripture.
So we've really gone deep here.
We went deep.
Into a very complex and personal issue.
Absolutely.
We've gone through the Old and New Testament. We explored all these different interpretations throughout history.
That's right.
And really wrestled with this tension between the ideal of marriage and the reality of living in a broken world.
Absolutely.
So you should have a much clearer picture now.
Yeah.
Of all these different viewpoints, from the early church to what scholars are saying today.
That's right.
And a good grasp of what Dr. Metters is arguing for.
Yeah. His view of the ideal.
Yeah. And when you consider how long people have been debating this.
Oh, yeah. Centuries.
It really makes you think.
Yeah.
Like, if we really focused on that original ideal of marriage.
Yeah.
How would that change the way we think about commitment, forgiveness, restoration?
Yeah. How we deal with brokenness in our community.
Exactly. This is just the starting point, right?
It's just the beginning.
This deep dive.
Yep.
Dr. Metters recommended that book, Jesus on Divorce, by Heth and Wenham. Really important if you want to go deeper.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe explore some of those specialized interpretations of Matthew.
Yeah.
Or the different arguments about remarriage.
That's right.
You know, this is a really important topic.
Yeah, it's vital.
So we hope this has given you some good tools.
A good framework.
To think through it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.